This is the Horse Radio Network.
This is episode 5 of Horsemanship Radio, brought to you by Index Fund Advisors, IFA.com. Horsemanship Radio is part of the family of the Horse Radio Network. Today, we have Carrie Scrimma of the American Competitive Trail Horse Association and Philip Rawls, trainer of high-performance reined cow horses. They're here to give us their views on horsemanship today. Thank you for supporting our sponsors to make this show possible. This is Debbie Laux, and you're listening to Horsemanship Radio. Welcome back, everybody. Horsemanship Radio airs on the 15th and the 30th of the month. I have my producer, Glenn the Geek, here.
Hey, how's everybody?
Good. He's here to tell us more details about the network. Hi, Glenn. Can you tell us all the ways that the listeners can find the shows?
Yep. And if you're new to listening to Horsemanship Radio, this will help you out. The best way to listen is through our app, either in the iOS or Android App Store. Just search for Horse Radio Network, and you'll find all 11 of our shows there. You can either stream them right through your phone or download them and listen to them later. It's so simple and easy. It's the best way to do it. Or you can go to horsemanshipradio.com or horseradionetwork.com, and you can catch all the past episodes. Actually, we just went over on Horse Radio Network, we just went over 3,200 episodes that we've had over the past 5 years.
Wow. So that's amazing.
And you have 5 of those.
Yeah. We're gaining on you.
That's right. You're catching up. Hey, it's holiday season, and you have all your shopping done. Did you buy Monty anything yet?
No. We're headed to Brazil on Tuesday, though. So, maybe I can get him something exotic while down there. Yeah. What do you get Monty Roberts for
Yeah,
Christmas?
That's a good question. I was going to ask you that.
Yeah. Yeah. We ask each other that. The whole family does that. We don't have any little teeny ones running around anymore.
I'm not really a stuff person, and I got to imagine that Monty isn't either. He doesn't seem like a stuff guy to me. He could care less, probably.
No, could care less. Yeah. He does like that store as seen on TV, though. He's really funny about
really?
That.
Really? That I wouldn't have guessed.
No, you wouldn't have guessed that. But you know what he does is he goes in there and buys goofy gifts for everybody. That's what's fun about. Like those hoses that shrink up into 6 inches long and they're, Yeah, he loves that stuff. But that's the only shopping he does that I'm aware of.
Who gets him to go clothes shopping? Like once
No.
No, doesn't happen.
In fact, he's got a uniform. Everybody knows his blue shirts and his red tie. Yeah, yeah. And the only thing that's the same all the time is his bolo, But the jeans, my mom literally takes them and runs dye through the washer again just to keep them all crisp because he hates buying new clothes. So she keeps them crisp and colorful by dyeing them. That's a secret right there.
Oh, my gosh. That's funny. Well, what's coming up on today's show?
I'm so excited. We've got Carrie Scrimma from ACTHA, the American Competitive Trail Horse Association. And she has a long and varied career all the way from East Coast English riding girl to a founder of really what is known in the Western world as a CTC, a Competitive Trail Association now, which is really, it's got a Western hat pretty much as its look. So she's really has a varied career that way and has changed hats many times, but really knows horsemanship down to the ground. I think you're going to love hearing from her. And then we've got a very young guy. He's about 30 now. His name is Philip Rawls. We'll find out from him how old he is, because I'm going to ask him. And he has, the interesting thing about horse trainers is it's interesting to say he's young when they're 30 years old, but a lot of these guys, they started when they weren't even double digits. So they literally have decades of work under their belts when I say young these days. And he is changing the face of training in the reining world for the better, I think. We'll hear more about Carrie Scrimma after this from Index Fund Advisors, matching people with portfolios.
Hi, I'm Mark Hebner, president of Index Fund Advisors and proud owner of Monty Roberts' Willing Partners graduate, He's a Sugar Bear. Investment portfolios are a lot like horses. You need to find one that best suits you, your temperament, and your stage of life. Some people might like an energetic horse and an aggressive investment portfolio, while others are more comfortable with a gentle ride and a more conservative investment portfolio. The trick is to find the one that's right for you. That's what Index Fund Advisors is all about, matching people with portfolios, risk-appropriate, low-cost, and globally diversified investment portfolios. You can find the right portfolio for you by taking the Risk Capacity Survey at IFA.com. That's IFA as an Index Fund Advisors. Or you can call us toll-free at 888-643-3133. That's 888-643-3133.
Now we have Carrie Scrimma, the founder of ACTHA, the American Competitive Trail Horse Association. Welcome, Carrie Scrimma.
Well, thank you, Debbie. I'm delighted to be here and be talking with you today.
We're honored to have you on. You have such a long and varied career with horses, and I just love your upbringing. But I especially love your heart that you have for horses and the reasons that you continue when you could be riding into the sunset with your wonderful husband, Tom. You guys are at harder. I think you're working harder than you've ever worked in your life. Am I right?
That is absolutely true. I kind of thought we'd be, you know, in rocking chairs on the back porch by now, but that's true. We are working harder and longer hours than we've ever worked before. But, you know, again, it's a labor of love, and it's a passion. And, you know, when you have a job kind of like that, it doesn't really feel like work. I mean, there are times when it does, but, you know, every day I am happy to get up in the morning. And that's, you know, I think that's the most important thing. You know?
That is. That's the sign that it's really not a job. It's your passion. For those people who are listening that don't know much about the American Competitive Trail Horse Association, we have a link to your website in the show notes, and we're happy to share that with them and be the first to tell them about it. But tell us a little bit about what your goal was in the 6 miles and six obstacles idea behind American Competitive Trail Horse.
Well, you know, my career with horses, my love of horses, I guess I'm going to kind of start with that because, you know, I think in my bio it does say I grew up in New York City, which is not not the place most horse people come from.
Yeah, that's
you
true.
Know? Kentucky,
yeah,
Montana,
Texas.
You
yeah.
know, I grew up in New York City. And when I said to my parents I wanted to ride a horse, they said, why don't you take a cab like everybody else? You know, so it was, you know, it's somewhat unusual. But, you know, I think for a lot of people, the love of horses is born in them. It's just born there. Mm. My parents had no idea where this child came from. You know, whose family did this child really belong to? But I was born loving horses, and I was able to, through determination and luck and whatever, I was able to pursue that. And I was a show horse person, you know, first of all, to begin with. But I always did enjoy just riding out on a horse, just riding cross country.
Good old trail horse, yeah. What makes a great trail horse? We'd love to know that from Carrie Scrimma.
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting. I think any horse can be a great trail horse. First of all, it was God's intention. I believe for a horse, they are a roaming creature. Mm-hmm. They love it. They enjoy it. It's natural to them. So, you know, one of the things with ACTHA, as we started talking about, is that you don't have to buy a particularly specially bred horse. You know, this isn't like cutting or racing or mm-hmm. jumping, where, you know, a bloodline would matter. Any horse is really fairly well adapted for the trail. What makes a great trail horse? It's the same thing that makes a great any horse. Mm-hmm. It's an attitude. It's a willingness. It's a partnership. Nice. And it comes from the heart of the horse as much as anything else, any physical attribute that the horse would have. Mm-hmm. Yes, we want athleticism. Yes, we want balance. Yes, we want bravery. Those are things you want in a horse. But again, it's that willingness to be a partner and to help the human along. It's their feet that are touching the ground. So just about more than any other sport, this horse and this rider have to communicate beautifully. Because let's face it, you're not in the safety of an arena. Right. You're out on trail where anything could happen and probably will.
Yeah. How do you anticipate that? How do you do that when you're home and you're getting ready? You're going to leave for an ACFA ride in a couple of weeks and you're trying to get all those conditions and conditioning. How do you prepare for that?
Well, I think it's a matter of really riding your horse, becoming a partner with your horse. It comes from shared experiences, and of course, lessons are helpful. Being a good horseman is an important part. Having a good seat, having good hands, and being very well balanced. Mm-hmm. We have to remember that a trail horse is not working in a prepared arena. When you ride a horse in an arena that has been watered and raked and, everything, right. This horse isn't going to step in a hole. He's not going to be on rocks. He's not going to end up in a bog. You've got prepared footing. But on trail, the balance of the horse and the balance of a rider is critical. Mm-hmm. It can be critical. It could be life-threatening. For a horse to, and a rider to be balanced. So I would say that it's very important for riders to understand that, trail riding in a way is its own sport. It's mm-hmm. not just something that you do, and it's a wonderful way to refresh your, arena performance horse. Mm-hmm. I have never seen a sour trail horse. I've seen a lot of sour arena horses. But once they get used to the trail, something just perks up in them. Especially, if your horse has gotten lazy or bored, up when they go on trail.
That's true.
It's a wonderful thing. It refreshes their mind. It keeps their muscles strong. It improves their balance. And they have to learn where to put their feet. But it's also important, very important, for the rider to stay balanced, to understand that, in this sport, we ride basically in the middle of the saddle, not, up forward where, like if you were riding a jumper or a hunter, you might be, or, back further where, if you were doing another sport, cutting or something, you might be sitting back a little bit further. Mm-hmm. But this is a sport where we try to stay balanced. And by that, I mean that the rider sits in the middle of the saddle and their feet, they're so to speak, their head and their heels, are still in a straight line. The hips, the shoulder, the heel, your ears are in a straight line. Because this horse has to balance himself on uneven terrain. Mm-hmm. So it's important for you as the rider to aid him in every way possible to stay balanced and to stay quiet. So a good seat is very important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Soft hands, wet saddle blankets. So I'm hearing lots of practice and letting your horse do his conditioning and his discipline. From the trail, from the natural habitat itself. Is that right?
Absolutely. And what people, often, in the show ring, with the different breeds of horses, but the riders are doing a lot more manipulating of the horse, as we're on trail, this horse needs a soft contact, you know, a soft rein, because he needs his head and neck to be balanced. He also needs his head and neck for eyesight. And, you know, this is your partner. It's his feet touching the ground. He's going to tell you if it's unsafe, you know, or, you know, something like that. That's what you're counting on him to do. Mm-hmm. You know, a rider, a trail rider, needs to look up and forward, you know, up between the horse's ears. You don't want to get knocked off by some tree limb.
Right.
You know, you need to be looking where you're going and what's up on trail ahead of you. But the horse needs to look at the ground, you know, so he needs to know where to place his feet. So, you know, more on trail, I would say, than, you know, some other places, certainly in an arena. But you want to allow the horse, the movement of his head and neck so that he can adjust his eyesight, because they don't focus. I'm sure you know that. They don't focus quite the same way that we do.
Yeah, that's a good point about their eyes. Yeah. Yeah, explain a little bit about that. Maybe people don't realize that.
Well, when a horse raises his head, that's the position where he sees distance. We've all seen our horses out in the pasture, and all of a sudden they throw their head up and look, mm-hmm. you know, because they think they've heard a sound or a predator or somewhere. You know, we've all seen those horses do that. And that's because to see distance, they raise their head. Mm-hmm. But when they need to see the ground beneath them when they're walking along, you want their head in a lower position. And, you know, because trail riding is longer, you're not on the horse for just 2 minutes, you know, going around in an arena. You're on the horse for several hours, mm-hmm. very often. You're not going to ride in the same kind of collected frame that you would be possibly in an arena riding. You know, no one rides around, you know, in mm-hmm. complete collection for 2 hours. You'd be exhausted, and so would the horse.
Yeah.
So it's a much more relaxed thing, but it has a purpose, and that is that this horse be allowed the movement of his head and neck and not be manipulated, so to speak, by the rider.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are times when, you know, yeah, you would want to collect your horse, you know, when you're called on to do an obstacle. But this is, you know, I think one of the things that's so nice about ACTA and the trail riding is that, you know, very often trail riders don't pay attention to their horses.
Yeah.
They're talking to their friends.
Yeah. Yeah. We
women tend to do that, don't we?
Yeah.
We go out there for a good chat. That's true.
Yeah, and they're just walking around on a loose rein, and they're not paying any attention. And the horse, you know, find out this horse is getting a little floppy, and his training is kind of falling apart, and he begins to know that you're not paying mm-hmm. attention to him.
Mm-hmm.
So he starts to take advantage little by little by little. Mm-hmm. And so I think one of the blessings of ACTA is that it keeps people sharp.
Mm-hmm.
It says, you know, now you can ride around and chat with your friends, you know, between obstacles. But here comes an obstacle, and you need to focus. You need to pay attention to this horse. And that's also a great, you know, life kind of thing. You know, stress all the time wears you out.
Yeah.
I mean, you would, you know, if you were stressed all the time in your work or whatever you did, you would, you know, you would be just an exhausted person, and the horse would be also. But a little stress is good if it's followed by relaxation, by periods of relaxation, because it keeps us sharp. It keeps us mentally active. It keeps the horse mentally active and focused. So here you're riding along, chatting with your friends, talking, meeting new people, having a great time in the woods, and then all of a sudden there's a little obstacle. You know, that's the time when you focus. You know, start to pay attention to your horse. And it gets people thinking more, paying attention. And one of the fun things I love when I judge is watching these people and these horses think their way through an obstacle, because they have to. A lot of our obstacles are, although natural in nature, require a little thought. How am I going to do this? You know, and what if this situation actually happened to me? One of the obstacles that I like particularly, Debbie, is one that, well, a lot of the obstacles come from my experience.
My experience
is trail riding, and so I've kind of made up little stories, little scenarios. And one of the things that happened to me was I was riding along with my dog. My dog's accompanying me, and my dog was bitten by a rattlesnake. Dogs, when they're bitten by rattlesnakes, they can't continue to follow you home. It's not like they're going to come home on three legs. They just lay down, and they're not going anywhere. Yeah. And so I had to pick up my dog and put him on the front of my horse. Mm-hmm. And the horse had never done this before.
Oh, new obstacle.
Yeah.
How big is your dog?
So I had to lift up my dog, put him on the front of my saddle, and then I had to remount, you know, kind of holding the dog in place because he was like, so it became an act of obstacle.
That's a mounting block lesson and a baggage lesson. Is that right?
Right. And so, you know, in essence, we don't use a real dog. We use a stuffed toy. Uh-huh. But again, people have to think about how would they go about doing this? How do you put, you know, then this could happen. So there are a lot of really fun kind of obstacles that have come from our experiences. You know, ACVA, we try not to do dangerous things. But thinking things, fun things, that's really in our, mm-hmm. our wheelhouse. So
it is fun. It is fun. I think I've been on about a half a dozen rides now, and I can highly recommend 6 miles, six obstacles is a lot of fun. It's just enough to spend a good day out on the trail without, and still going a round trip and getting it all done in one day and enjoying yourself. I love it. Tell me a little bit about your, some of your goals for 2014. I heard about Diamond in the Rough, and I love your heart and what you're doing to give horses a job.
Well, that became obviously important to ACVA and to Tom and myself, you know, is that, wow, there's this problem in America. We have unwanted horses we're not taking a political stance on slaughter or anything else. We're just saying, this is a problem. Where is the solution? And we want to be part of the solution. Now, you know, as I said before, any breed of horse can be a trail horse. And so there are so many able-bodied horses that are retiring from some career, such as racing or something like that, that do make great trail horses. This is a job for them. The problem is unemployment.
Yeah.
The problem is the horses need a job.
That's right.
And ACVA is a job that any horse can be good at. The riders can learn to enjoy, and the horse can learn to enjoy. It's very natural to a horse. Mm-hmm. So it's not really very hard to teach them to become good trail horses. It's got a lot to do with experience. And, so we have this Diamond in the Rough Award, which is primarily aimed, or is absolutely aimed, at rescue horses. Mm-hmm. Horses that have been gotten under, dire circumstances. And rider or a contestant has to do to get his horse into the Diamond in the Rough category would be to let us know that he was adopted from a rescue facility.
Okay.
And that certainly would be one way. But certainly there are other circumstances, that might qualify as a rescue. And all they would all the contestants would need to do is write us a little note telling us why they think this horse was, was a rescue or should be in the rescue category. Uh-huh. And we would review that. And, if we felt that the same way they did, then he would be eligible for a Diamond in the Rough award.
I see. So it could be a neglect issue. They've taken a horse on that was in a situation that could be life-threatening. We have categories of hoarders. I know what you mean. So anything like that that you guys deem, you just want to pat these guys on the head, or as we say, rub on the forehead, and reward these people for reaching out to those horses that don't have a job right now.
Absolutely. You know, obviously rescue, rescue is a great place to adopt horses, but there are other situations, mm-hmm. And we don't want to leave those out either, where horses are, in need of help.
That's great, Carrie.
We just, we see the problem as an unemployment problem. Mm-hmm. And, there's two ways to solve this problem. One is to throw money at it, and we do that.
Yeah, we do.
We do have a charitable arm. Mm-hmm. But the other that we feel is even more important is that they have a job.
That's wonderful. And I know this year you're partnering with PATH International, which is therapeutic riding centers. I think there's something like 850 across the nation. I'm really proud of you for that, too. And you've got a big event coming up March 14th, I believe. Is it a St. Patrick's Day angle on that? Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. This is really Tom's baby. He's kind of our marketing head, and I'm really the horse, kind
I'm
of
glad you're
person.
Here then. Yeah, we're the horse people too. but tell us just quickly about that, and we'd love to help you with that.
Well, ACTA has kind of partnered up with PATH, which is the therapeutic riding centers. We're running, in essence, ACTA is a way to for the ride host to raise money. So this is a way for PATH to raise money for PATH. We're kind of hoping that this really takes off, and all these centers, have rides, and it becomes a movement. Mm-hmm. We're thinking big. We're hoping to raise $1 million for PATH.
Good girl. So, that's awesome.
But this is to help. I think it's been recognized, certainly, more in recent years, how much horses and humans have in common, and how much the movement of a horse can aid a human physically and psychologically, both ways. Riding on a horse, is always made me feel good, but then I've heard scientific evidence of why it makes you feel good.
That's right. And they're starting to figure it out, aren't they? That we knew it all along.
Yeah. I think for the, children who have handicaps this is wonderful to pair them up, with horses and people who understand horses. I mean, and understand, the handicaps, and that's the role of the PATH Center.
I love that you've partnered with them to put money where a good cause should be, and that brings in horses and jobs. So it covers that unemployment figure, and it also brings people together in a really healthy. A healthy choice, a great recreation, and a great therapy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It is. It's great for the kids. It's great for the horses. It's great for the parents of these children. And so we are, we are delighted.
That's wonderful. Wonderful, Carrie and Tom. Well, thank you so much. We would love to have you back again, Carrie, and have us learn maybe some tip, a favorite tip or a favorite thing from you. So if you don't mind, I'm going to ask you back, and we'll listen from the very best, Carrie Scrimma of ACTHA. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Philip Rawls was born in Ojai, California, raised around horses and brought up in the horse show industry. Philip's dad, Ron Rawls, is also a renowned trainer, and Philip began showing when he was only 11 years old. He began his own training business when he was 20 years old, and he's gone on to win multiple championships in the show ring. We will welcome Philip Rawls right after this commercial.
Hi, I'm Monty Roberts, and I know that I'm transforming the lives of horses globally. You can learn to do it too on my Equus Online University. There's a new lesson on there each week, all the way from join up to advanced. Watch world's champions give their lessons. Join at MontyRoberts.com. Go to my Equus Online University. You can transform your horse too.
Welcome, Philip Rawls. Happy to have you on the show.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, we're really excited. I mean, everybody's listening to your accomplishments and where you've come from at such a young age. And I know that there's probably people that would love to hear how you did it, you know, the secrets of how you started. I imagine it's something a little bit like this. You work really hard, you grind like crazy, and you get somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's kind of the recipe for having any success in anything that you do. You know, I think having some great opportunities in, you know, being able to capitalize on them and, you know, give yourself the best opportunity that you can with the hard work and the horsepower and the people behind you, you know, certainly makes a makes or breaks, you know, all that hard work.
Yeah, that's just like a accessories poster or something, right? It's all those things. But I know you started at a really young age around horses. You always were around horses, right?
Yeah, my dad trained horses, and so I, you know, I grew up in a horse training family. So I was always, you know, brought up from the get go. You know, learning, you know, good horsemanship skills and, you know, the philosophies and hard work that it takes to, you know, to put your mind in the right spot and your work ethic and, you know, be able to hopefully take it to the next level.
Mm-hmm. You've done that. You've accomplished a lot. And I don't think it was in probably the most conventional way, because I've watched you out in the arena taking your time with horses and letting them find themselves. I listened to you give lessons or work with somebody on a horse, and I hear words like, try to find something that he can do well. Let him find himself. You know, show him the easy road. Tell me about that. Tell me about your horsemanship behind how you create those champions.
You know, I think, you know, a big part of that influence comes from, you know, having the opportunity to spend time, you know, around, you know, Monty, who I, you know, got a chance to ride with quite a bit. You know, my dad, obviously, who kind of started his training career under Monty. And so, you know, a lot of the philosophies and ideas around, you know, around my training style and program has developed from that thought process of trying to take a horse and get his potential of whatever that level is going to be, hopefully that horse reaches his potential. You know, as a horse trainer, I mean, that's your goal, is to bring out that horse's ability and potential. You know, and I had the fortune of being able to ride with Harold Farron also, you know, and he was an ex- extremely well-rounded horsemen also from all different walks of life, from dressage horses to circus horses to, I mean, he trained everything. So
yeah.
It wasn't, you know, his training style along with, you know, several of the other people. It was a little more about just being a good horseman and training the horse's mind and being able to, you know, unlock all that information.
That's great. Yeah, that's great. I'd love to hear the philosophies of some of these people that have been around a long time, and I'm so glad that they mentored you. It's nice that they're sharing some of that thing. Would you... I know that it's so important where you get a horse. Would you rather have a blank slate when you get your horse in to train, or would you rather have some miles on him and then you polish him? Tell me about how you receive a horse to go into training.
You know, I've done it both ways. I've had some horses come to me late in their, you know what I mean, in their training career, where we have, you know, 4 or 5 months before the fraternities, and I feel like that is kind of a totally different training style, because you really don't know necessarily what they've been shown and what they haven't been shown, and exactly mm-hmm. what kind of training method that they've, you know, explored with them. So I feel like you know, it's kind of a room skew when you get a horse late like that, you know, and you are constantly evaluating the situation and trying to see, okay, well, I have this amount of time. Do I have enough time to start over and try to retrain this, you know what I mean, this particular mm-hmm. maneuver, or do I need to just take him for what he is and just try to clean it up and polish it and go? You know, and mentally, if they're the type of horse that can handle a program being, you know what I mean, a little bit different than what they've been used to, you know, mm-hmm. it'll work out.
Okay.
I always prefer to kind of have a horse fresh. If I can get them from the start, I really feel like I'm just more comfortable through the whole process, all the way through their training and showing career, because I know what's going on and I know their tendencies. I know their insecurities. I know their strong points. You know, I feel like I understand them and have a, and just have a good relationship with them. You know, sometimes mm-hmm. when you get them late, you're not even sure really, you know what I mean, what direction to go other than just starting to do the maneuvers and, you know, and hopefully it's as polished as you want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I've heard you say that it's important those first rides, that just how important those first rides are, those patterns that you establish first.
Absolutely. I mean, I feel like that relationship that you start with them on the ground from the get-go, you know, the first 2 weeks of groundwork on a young horse are crucial, and the first 90 days will be with him the rest of his life. And so depending on how that goes, you know, you could take a great horse and stub your toe once or twice in the first 90 days, and he might not ever forgive you.
Mm.
Or if it goes right, you might take a good horse and make a great horse because he's mentally strong and he understands what his job is and his program and his willingness to do what you ask him to do. You know, it makes a big difference in the long haul when you're talking about hopefully having a horse for 3 or 4 years of showing, you know.
Good. Yeah. So you're looking for longevity. You're looking for a relationship with that horse for a career.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and that for me has been, has been something that I've really worked hard to do is I'm looking to have horses that I don't want to turn new horses over every year. I want to try to, you know, start with them and hopefully see them through their whole career, you know, whatever that might be, you know. And some horses, you know, they reach a certain point and, you know, they're outstanding individuals and they can go on and show and keep up with the pace, which is great. And there's some horses that, you know, that might not be in the cards for them, but mm-hmm. at least you can have, an impact on that horse and, you know, maybe where he goes or what kind of the rest of his life could be for him, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some reiners, low level, I suppose, are known for just overworking a horse, just punishing if they can't, you know, if the cow goes and, you know, if a cow gets sneaky. So, but I've seen you back off a horse, try to find, like we said earlier, where he can excel, where he can find his confidence. Is confidence probably one of the most important things in a horse? Like, that sounds obvious, but.
Yeah, it really is because, you know, I feel like, you know, first and foremost, they need to understand what their job is. It doesn't mean that they can do the job at the level you're hoping they can do it at, but they need to understand what their job is.
Okay.
You know, whatever that is, and especially like showing a rank cow horse, where they have to do three different events. You know, it's not every horse is going to be super strong in all three events. You know, they'll have their strong points where they might be really good in the cutting. Or, you know, I mean, a little weak in the reining and good down the fence, or vice versa. There might be a great reining horse, great fence horse, and be, you know, average in the herd. You know, so you have to really try to play to your horse's strengths. And so, you know, and a horse being confident is absolutely the most important part of that.
Mm-hmm.
If he's confident in his job and knows he can do his job consistently, that's about as good as it gets, you know. You know, because that horse is going to take that information, and when things get tough and you need him and you need to call on him a little bit extra maybe than you normally would at home, he's going to offer, you know, and he's going to try for you right there, because that's the difference between winning and, you know, maybe being at the bottom of the finals.
Great. Yeah. So don't be so rough with your horse. Give him some confidence. And what do you do? What are the consequences out there for him? If a horse makes a mistake, what do you ask him to do?
Well, you know, obviously, it really depends on that horse's mental state and why he made a mistake. Did he make a mistake because maybe he got a little out of balance and it was an accident? Or did he make a conscious decision not to do what you're asking him to do? I feel like that's a big difference, and it can look the same, but the mental thought behind it is crucial, because if he made a decision not to do it, you know, he just said, you know what, I'm not going to go to the right or put the cow or whatever it's going to be. Well, then he might have to stop and turn around a few extra times and do some extra work, and, you know, or if he lets that cow go, he might have to go gather him up. He might have to run a little farther, a little faster, until he gathers him back up and gets back in control of the situation.
So you put him to work.
You want to make them feel like they're in control, whichever choice they make, it was their choice. So if he chooses to let that cow go, well, then he might have to run around the arena a little bit more. You know, he's probably going to have to do a little extra work until he gets back and get back into position. But if it was, you know, most of the time in a situation like that, I'll usually give them the benefit of the doubt the first time. The second time they do it, if they do it the same way, then I'm going, okay, well, you know, we might have an issue here. The third time he does it, you're going, okay, well, now he's going to have to work, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because as big of athletes as we ask them to be and what we ask them to do, you know, they're going to get a little out of balance, or they're going to mistime something, or they're going to have issues just like anybody else.
Right. You know what this reminds me of a lot, Philip? It reminds me of growing up at Flagazette Farms. You know, if we did something wrong, I know you live there. If we did something wrong, we went to work, didn't we? And we knew the contract. So sounds like the training methods were a little bit similar. Do you think he treated us like horses? I'm hearing this.
I think the philosophy all the way around, I think it works on anything.
Very good.
You know, I think there's, you know, I mean, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter whether it's my cow dogs or my horses or people or whoever. You know, I think that in general, everybody, you know, we all have a choice. And I think if you have the tools to do it, you know, you can make the choice one way or the other, you know. And horses are extremely smart. So they don't want to do extra work if they don't have to. You know, if they can learn that if they execute it properly and they try for you and put a little effort into it, their job's done. Well, then pretty quick they start looking for that reward, that little pat on the neck, a little, you know, you can sit here and catch your air for a little bit. You're doing good. You know, that's what I wanted. I feel like those horses having the opportunity to get rewarded, even though it's work related, it's still a reward. You know, when they accomplish something, or they stop that cow the way you want them to, or they hold that stop the way you want them to, you know, any little reward right there, they pick up on it. You know, so I think that's something that's really important.
Good. Well, it's working for you. So you have accomplished a lot at this point, but are there still goals that you have, things that you want to accomplish?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the list is endless. you know, I think that obviously winning this National Goods Security is the highest priority. You know, I feel like that's a major goal that I would love to achieve. That and winning the World's Greatest Horseman. Those are my two, you know, those are my two majors. You know, I've had success at the, you know, doing the derbies, and, you know, I've made the derby finals. I've made the derby finals 5 or 6 times now, and made the finals at World's Greatest, and Mag 7 and a few of those others, you know, which have all been very exciting and fun, and loved every minute of it, you know. But obviously that, you know, that golden egg is the Futurity for me. And I've grown up watching it with my dad showing there and all of my friends and fellow competitors, and that's what we're all after. Having that horse and that all the stars align on the right day and everything come together.
Yeah. How fun. Well, you did well this year. So you were 2 in the top 25. And you were 15th on Black Design, Monty and Pat's horse, and you were 20th on Jackie Sparkle.
Yeah,
is that right?
You know, I had it was a good Futurity. You know, both of my horses there this year were you know, I had a good runs in the prelims, nice solid runs all the way through the deal. You know, I had a couple little things in the finals that I wish I could have had back, but you know, when you're going that hard at it, you know, it's kind of one of those deals. It's either going to come together or it's not. And if you stub your toe, you know, it's not all going to come together. But overall, my horses showed really well, and I was very happy with them.
There you go, and that's Monty's horse. So. Yep. Pretty exciting there. And then his half-brother is Blackie, or Black Design, who you took 15th. And I'm really excited about how you're doing. And we're going to follow you, Philip, and see how your career unfolds, because you got great big things coming, I know. And we'd love to have you back on. We would love to record a tip from you, because I know people probably ask you all the time, what's your secret, what you got going, what's your favorite thing to tell people about your training methods. So we'd love to have you back if you'll come.
Yeah, absolutely. I've enjoyed it. Thank you.
Well, now it is that time of the show where we do the Horsemanship Mailbag, where Debbie shares all her deep, dark secrets. And we have a listener question, and the question is, why does my horse perform perfectly at home, but when I take him to a big show, he chokes?
Yeah, he chokes, right? No.
Well,
So what happens here is I think you have to think about what you're doing, dear reader. The horse probably is not the one that is having performance anxiety. It's more likely that we're telegraphing these things. So what you want to do is investigate what is happening when he's choking. If you're taking him to a show and that's the only time that he, whatever's happening, maybe he's not jumping like he's supposed to jump, maybe he's refusing to go into the arena, whatever it is that you're defining as chokes, it's because we're doing something different. choking's reserved for human beings with performance anxiety, okay? It's not within the makeup of a horse to view any special occasion as more important than another. And they just don't perform badly because they're nervous. They might be nervous because of us. Because think about what you did on a normal training day. On a normal training day, you go out there, you scuffle your boots up to the stall, you get them out, you do your routine. But what do you do differently on a show day? Do you get them out early? Do you plait the mane? Do you braid the tail? Do you load them in a trailer? Are you a little more uptight, maybe a little less patient than normal? Even just getting them halfway through their flake of hay and out the barn is stressful. So their neocortex, the horse's brain, is different than a person's. That part that says planning and, anticipating, that's not part of their brain. That's part of our brain. And they simply do not have the mental capacity to be capable of experiencing those feelings of performance anxiety. So we'll just have to, we have to look in the mirror and we have to decide that we're going to do all these things that take our adrenaline up often and well enough that we will bring our adrenaline down. So if it just means going to a show and not getting in the arena, do that. If you get up early, put them in the trailer, plait the mane, put a saddle on that you don't, normally have all polished and smelling like. Think about their senses. Their senses are acute to what we are doing. That's their preservation method. They feel our anxiety. They feel the difference in the routine. That's my answer for horsemanship mailbag today.
And I think, too, if I can just add to that a little bit, as we've learned, it a lot of times does come back to the rider. One of the best suggestions I ever heard about that was from Daniel Stewart, who talks about, he actually has been a U.S. team coach in the mental side of things. Mm-hmm. And one of the things he says, and he says this in every clinic he does on the mental side of riding, is that every rider going into a warm-up ring should have a song. They should have their song that calms mm-hmm. them and calms their horse. And he wants you to sing that song. And it was mm-hmm. just, and we've had so
a
many,
great tip.
We've had so many people that have used it and riders that have used it, and it works. It really does work, because when you're singing, your stress level just goes immediately down. Yes. It's just a nature thing. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a rhythm to it. It gets you back in sync physiologically, too. We're going to have to do Monty's Equus Online University, we're going to have to do a lesson on breathing, because we brought that up with two different experts today about breathing, bringing our heart rates down and controlling our responses so that our horses are relaxed. Because as one of our great experts, Carrie Scrimma, had said, there is an anticipation by the horse that if our leader is okay, then I must be okay. There is a science behind the physiology of horses, but we want to partner with them so that we can become anticipating of our horse's needs. And that's really good horsemanship.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Where in the world is Monty Roberts?
Monty's looking forward to meeting some new friends, two-legged and four-legged, in November and December 1. November 30 and December 1, it's Horse Training Workshop in Brazil. It's just outside of Sao Paulo. And also December 7 and 8, a Horse Training Workshop outside of Sao Paulo with Monty in Brazil. January 25 and 26, we have a Saturday night evening, a night of inspiration with Monty Roberts at Flagazette Farms in Solvang, California, at Monty and Pat's home. And on the next day, January 26th, we have a Life Lessons. It's a personal development workshop at Flagazette Farms based on the lessons learned from his autobiography. It's 58 weeks on the New York Times bestsellers list, and it's called The Man Who Listens to Horses. So you can find more at MontyRoberts.com or by calling 805-688-6288 in California.
So it looks like by the schedule, you're going to let him have some time off the beginning of January and actually spend some time at home in California?
He is. He's going to be at home in California, but he doesn't let grass grow under his feet.
It's not really time off. It's just
no. He doesn't tie a line to his toe and go fishing or anything like that.
No surfing. He gave up surfing a long time ago.
He does ride though. He'll be happy to be back on his horse, nice Chrome, and overseeing the Willing Partners horses and just seeing all the babies. You know, the babies will start coming in January. I just love that time of year. In California, the weather is pretty mild. Maybe not as mild as Florida with you, Glenn, but it is mild and nice there. So there'll be a lot of things to enjoy. And he'll be filming some of the Equus Online University lessons. We've got scripts piled up for him. And we also have one thing that's not mentioned in there is Horses and Soldiers. We'll have a clinic in December for our veterans with PTSD or PTSI, as he calls it. It's not post-traumatic stress disorder. He thinks it's an injury. So we call it PTSI.
Very good. Well, for details about today's show, you can go to horsemanshipradio.com where you can find the links, photos, and more information about all of the guests. If you've forgotten, you know, who was on the show or their website, that's the easiest resource to find. Is just go to horsemanshipradio.com. And as always, we love your feedback. Please follow us on Facebook. It's facebook.com/Monty Roberts and Twitter at twitter.com/Monty_Roberts.
Very good. And many thanks to our sponsors, Index Fund Advisors and Equus Online University. And be sure to visit all of their other great shows on Horse Radio Network at www.horseradionetwork.com. Until next time, have many happy horse hours.